now entering the truth zone, deep into the vortex of the information revolution with your host, Michael B.
This is the Truth Zone with your host, Michael B., and I wanted to end the song earlier, but I got lost in thought today, this morning, all weekend, whatever. I'm not going to go into the specific details, but now I could do my show as long as I want for the time being, because I'm out of a job. Now, I've been a contractor for IBM for almost 3 years, and I've done stellar work, and I've got the emails to prove it. IBM should change their name to India Business Machines, because that's where they want to send all of their jobs. I am, or was, the last American on their Tivoli scheduling team. They've also got rid of their American TWS admins over the almost 3 years that I've been with them. The third-party client that I was servicing, primarily I was the lead liaison, was Kaiser Permanente. And Kaiser also screwed me because I had gotten confirmation from the primary project manager that I was reporting to with Kaiser, that specifically asked for an American onshore resource. That's what we're called now. We're not human beings. We're resources. So that's why I was specifically hired. Anyway, I was promised that I would be under contract for the entire year of 2017. So I was, all right, you know, good. I like my job. I like working from home. I've got the flexibility. You know, I don't have anybody up my ass. I just do my job, did it well. Didn't have a boss, really. Nobody. I didn't even report to my boss other than doing my timesheet every week. Submitted it over the application tool, emailed him, and emailed the contracting company that I was being paid directly by. And that was the end of it. I was basically my own guy. And I did it very well. So, knowing that, or believing that I was there the whole year, no reason for me to look for another job. Well, I get a notice. First IBM threatens me and a small group of people that I don't know who else they did it to, but the contracting company, that we have to take a 10% pay cut because IBM is hurting. So at first it was voluntary. So I said, no, I'm not going to take a 10% pay cut, and I can't speak for the others. But after a week or two, we then get a follow-up email. You will take the 10% decrease, or your last day of work will be May 20th. Well, now they have me over a barrel, right? So what am I going to do? I have to take the 10% pay cut. Then I get a letter from my contracting company, well, actually from IBM, telling me Kaiser has cut the contract by 6 months. Now, this is like May 20th, it was before Memorial Day weekend, or within that week, and they tell me, you're out June 30th. Nice. I get 5 weeks notice. So Kaiser screws me, and basically IBM screws me with the 10% pay cut. Now it gets better. I get a phone call from my contracting company's owner, and he tells me, Mike, they want you to stop working now. They want you to, they're going to put you on what they call furlough. What that means is, ladies and gentlemen, they're not firing me. They just say, stop working. Just stop working and you don't get paid. But we're not firing you. So now, not only does IBM pocket the 10% because Kaiser pays IBM at $120 an hour. I have the invoice. I only get $34 an hour. So IBM cuts my pay by 10%, keeps Kaiser's money. Now, I don't even get to work and finish the contract the last 3 weeks. IBM is pocketing 100% of the money, and I'm out. Oh, but IBM is looking for another project for me. Well, you know what? Fuck you, IBM. I'm going to sue IBM for lost wages because I have the invoice showing that they've been paid by Kaiser for my services up to June 30th. So I'm suing their ass. And they will pay me because they don't want this. They don't want a trial with me. They don't want to go to small claims with me. They don't want the legal fees, and they don't want the bad press, because you better believe I'm going to alert every local paper that I possibly can. And I'm going to go wild with this. And I'm going to be talking about IBM's history and their link to the Nazis in the weeks ahead. Believe me, I'm going to. And they're going to pay me. They're going to want to pay me the $4,500 that I'm going to be asking for, then deal with me in court. I mean, they don't want to. So this is just a disgusting ploy. You know, Kaiser doesn't give me notice that they're cutting the contract. I'm notified 5 weeks, and then my last 3 weeks is stolen from me, and IBM gets paid. I don't think so. I'm not going to lie down for that. Win or lose, I have to take a stand. Someone has got to take a stand against these assholes. And, you know, I've said to my wife, I've been battling anyway with myself, working for IBM in the first place with exactly what I just touched on. Their attachment to the globalists, their history, and quite frankly, they're part of the New World Order, the One World Order, and it has been, quite frankly, a conflict of interest for me morally for a very long time now. The more that I learn about what's going on in our world, the more I don't want to be connected to it. And being a source of income for a company like IBM has been a conflict. Allegedly, I may have another interview again with another huge corporate entity that doesn't have the greatest history. Matter of fact, people are complaining about them right now on Facebook, and I'm not quite sure, again, that I want to be a part of it. Sure, it's good money. It's a huge boost, actually. And sure, it'll pay my bills. It'll pay for my entertainment. It'll pay for my quality of life. It'll put at least $1,000 in my savings account every month after even all of my expenditures and whatnot. And that's true. But do I want to sit in a room all day, 40 plus hours a week, 5 days a week, like a robot, and just being part of this cog? Or, as I've been saying to my wife, you know what? I think it's time that I drop my profession altogether. Naturally, I would like to do this, full time, but you know, I've got to get noticed first, which means I got to start calling Alex Jones more now that I've got some time. And if you, the listeners, find value in this, you know, spread the word. Now, I've monetized Spreaker, and I'm going to have to monetize many other things. I'm going to have to ask for donations, going to have to set up a PayPal account, maybe, you know, possibly set up a prescription, and it wouldn't be big. I mean, it would be no more than $5 a month. But, you know, that's like down the road. But I'm thinking, you know what? Why not really do something productive? Why not really do something that matters? Why not really do something that helps people realize their dream in some aspect? And where I'm living, real estate is really jumping. And I'm thinking, you know, why not do that? Get out of the huge wheel, right? Get out of the New World Order. Get out of these mega corporations and do something really worthwhile for my fellow human beings. I really think that's a better alternative. And get out of this crap. enough about me. Let's move on to, I'm just going to start off with, you know, again, what I left off with Friday, the Ramadan Rampage. This is their holy month where they starve themselves, don't have sex, they don't do anything during the day, they wait at night. So I guess most of the killings, I guess, are during the day, so we all have to be careful. I covered June 8th. Naturally, I did not cover 9, 10, 11, and today. A lot of activity. And just briefly, going back to the 8th, 5 calendar days, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, Iraq has been subject to 10 acts of terrorism. So I'm just going to read off from the 8th through the 12th what we've got here. No, I'm sorry, I'm going to start with the 9th. I did the 8th. So we've got 2 in Iraq, Garbala and Musayab. In Garbala, 31 killed, 34 injured. A female suicide bomber detonates in the Shiite market, slaughtering over 30 people crowded around her. Again, Musayab, Iraq, 3 killed, 15 injured. A Shiite suicide bomber takes out 3 bystanders at a bus station. Hambagda, Cameroon, 4 killed, 6 injured. Islamists slit the throats of 4 villagers. Adamawa, Nigeria, still the 9th. 2 killed, 3 injured. 2 children are disassembled by a suspected Boko Haram bomb blast. June 10th. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 incidences. 5 of the 6, 4 of the 6 in Iraq. So, Zanjili and Kobane, total of 10 killed, 8 injured. 8 civilians are killed when the Islamic State sends mortar rounds into a residential area. An ISIS landmine eliminates 2 children. Mayo Sava, Cameroon, 3 killed. 3 little girls die after Boko Haram members strap bombs to them. How lovely, these people. Gordez, Afghanistan, 3 killed, 9 injured. 3 people at a mosque are shot to death by Religion of Peace rivals. See, it's like rival gangs here. It's just what they are. They're gangs. Habda, Iraq, and Shirkat, Iraq. Total of 27 killed, 48 injured. About 18 civilians lose their lives when ISIS members attack the town. 8 Iraqis are flattened by a jihadi car bomb. June 11th, very busy. 4 incidences. Quetta, Pakistan, 3 killed. Lashkar e Janvi, whatever, members roll up on a police checkpoint and machine gun 3 police officers. Kayamla, Nigeria, 8 are killed. 8 members of a civilian defense force are ambushed and killed outside the village by Boko Haram. Hirapu, Pakistan, 1 killed. A journalist who advocated on the behalf of religious minorities is assassinated by suspected fundamentalists. You see, that's exactly the word. They are fundamentalists. They are not radicals. Diyala, Iraq, 2 killed, 5 injured. A Fedayeen suicide bomber takes 2 other people with him. Nice. And today, Badr, Yemen, and there's probably going to be more today. Badr, Yemen, 2 are killed. 2 local soldiers are killed by Al-Qaeda suicide bombers. So there's your religion of peace update. So I want to go into what, to me, is very troubling. It's very troubling that I'm reading that the Trump administration is considering amnesty. Okay, this is something that I am not a fan of. I don't understand why I'm seeing from John Kelly a suggestion about giving amnesty to these so-called dreamers. First of all, these dreamers have been a nightmare to the United States of America. And over the past couple of weeks, I played for you a couple of audio clips about the damage that immigration, legal or not, has on our country. And I think that, we've forgotten about that. So, last week, and this is coming from the Washington Times, the Trump administration floated an amnesty idea for potentially 1 million illegal immigrants, looking to find permanent solutions for some of the most sympathetic cases in the long-running immigration debate. Okay. First of all, I'm tired of hearing this sympathetic bullshit. We have hundreds of thousands of U.S. military veterans living under bridges because they can't get a job or because they're mentally unfit to assimilate back into the private sector due to post-traumatic stress syndrome and other ailments due to the endless tours of duties in this war on terror garbage. And how about sympathy for our veterans? When will that ever come into play? How come we don't have enough money for our veterans, but yet we want to have billions of dollars for illegal immigrants? And now we want to have sympathy for these poor people and give them citizenship. No, I don't think so. I don't even want to have a discussion. I don't even want to have a debate while our own U.S. citizens, and especially those that sacrificed, and they did, whether we agree with the military-industrial complex or not, excuse me, that is a separate issue. 99.999% of our children going into the military have the best of intentions. All right? The military-industrial complex is another story. And yet, we don't have the money, and we don't have the medical capacity. Our veteran hospitals are in shambles, and Trump promises to fix that. Well, why doesn't the administration take care of real Americans first, right? And then when this economy is booming so much, and every American is fat and happy, then we can move on to illegals. There is no debate here. And illegals shouldn't be receiving constitutional rights, and they shouldn't be receiving welfare. And it's just what they get. They shouldn't be getting welfare, government handouts on the backs of Americans when they're here illegally. They're criminals, period. And as far as their anchor baby children, they're just that. They are not United States citizens under the original intent of the 14th Amendment. No matter where you were born on this planet, if you have a parent that has an allegiance to a foreign potentate and is answerable to a foreign jurisdiction thereof, you are not a United States citizen. You will have to leave the country, and you'll have to come back in legally and go through the citizen process. I don't give a damn what order a judge has written, excuse me. Judicial orders do not overturn the United States Constitution. Federal judges that have given citizenship to these people and that have allowed people like Barack Obama to become president and Ted Cruz to run for president are out of bounds. They have abused their judicial authority. If your parents are not United States citizens, both of them, by the time you are born, you are not a naturalized and a natural born citizen. You're not. That is what the 14th Amendment says. Period. End of story. If you want to change that, then you come up through Congress and you create a brand new amendment that says if you're born on U.S. soil, you're a United States citizen by birth. Do that then. A judicial order doesn't cut it. It's illegal. Period. And I'm certainly not going to have that debate. I don't want to hear from a lawyer. I don't want an email from a lawyer, a constitutional professor. I don't want to hear about it. I know what the Constitution says, and I've got the quotes from the original senators that created it. I've got it. I know what the intent was. If you have a parent that is subject to a foreign power, it doesn't matter where you're born. You are not a United States citizen. So these people are here illegally. Get them the hell out. In 2 days' testimony to Congress, Homeland Security Secretary John F. Kelly said he doubts his ability to oust some 250,000 immigrants from Central American countries who have been in the U.S. for nearly two decades on a temporary humanitarian relief program. Well, that's very funny. See, right here is a joke. He's saying that people have been here for nearly two freaking decades. In case you don't know what a decade is, that's a 10-year span. So, we're looking at up to and including 20 years. 20 years does not sound like a temporary humanitarian relief program. To me, temporary is a year or two. Not 2 decades. That sounds like, to me, in perpetuity. So, right off the bat, we've got a problem. They were here on a temporary relief program, then that makes them refugees. And a specific time should have been set, again, 6 months, a year, 24 months, then boom, you're out. You're out. Or in that time, whoever wanted to apply for citizenship could have gone through the process, but no. And Kelly doesn't have to remove anybody. I've talked about this for years. Arizona passed State Bill 1070. And simply put, all benefits were cut off, all free hospitalization was cut off, and if somebody was pulled over, could be going through a red light, going through a stop sign, a broken tail light, whatever. License, registration, and insurance. Oh, you don't have that? Oh, you don't have proper papers showing you belong in this country? Okay, then you're turned over to ICE and you're out the door. And illegals were leaving in droves. Churches notified the state of decreased population in their churches. Hospitals saw a downturn in illegals coming in for care. So they were leaving by attrition. You fine American citizens heavily that use illegals to do their yard work, etc., etc. You stop the employment of illegals that way, they have to go home. And they will. We don't have to round up people. And if the authorities happen to come in contact with someone that can't prove they belong here, they're turned over to ICE, out the door. That's the process, folks. Kelly also signaled that he would continue to protect 780,000 Dreamers from deportation and hope Congress would grant them permanent status. You see, here we go. So Secretary Kelly of Homeland Security is violating the law. He's breaking federal law. I guess he feels he's above the law. Perhaps he is above the law. And, well, he feels like it. He's going to protect over 750,000 so-called Dreamers, no, they're illegal aliens, from deportation. He's violating federal law. So you know what? Since he's admitted that, Homeland Security Secretary John F. Kelly should be indicted for whatever the specific law is that he's violating, removed from his post, indicted, and under trial. Period. Or he can plea bargain a sentence, and his life in politics is history. That's how it works, folks. That's the law. And if our politicians are not going to uphold the law, what then, what kind of a country then are we living in? We are living in a lawless society where the people with the guns, and that's the truth, and it's not just Homeland Security. It's all politicians. They've got the guns, right? They've got security detail. They've got the United States military. They've got local and state police at their behest. They can just do what they want to do because they've got the guns. And if Secretary Kelly decides to break the law, he can break the law. Who's going to stop him? It's up to Congress, and it's up to the president. But are they going to do that? Probably not. Is Donald Trump aware that Secretary Kelly has vowed to protect over 750,000 illegal aliens from deportation? Is he aware of that? I guess after this show, I should tweet President Trump this article from the Washington Times. And then once Donald Trump is aware that his Secretary of Homeland Security is willing to break the law, has vowed to break the law to protect illegal aliens from being deported from our country, now it's up to the CEO of the United States of America to take action. And if that CEO doesn't take action, well then, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a problem. Because now we're going to have a president that advocates breaking the law. And the next question has to be asked. And I'm going to play, and I'm not using the term devil's advocate, I'm going to play the country's advocate. If Donald Trump is going to allow one of his appointed secretaries, in this case of Homeland Security, to break the law and harbor illegal aliens, then the question has to be asked, then what right does Donald Trump or Attorney General Jeff Sessions, what right do they have then to crack down on sanctuary cities and sanctuary states like California if Donald Trump himself is not willing to uphold the law? What right then does Donald Trump have to crack down on sanctuary cities if he really intends to, if he is not going to uphold the law himself? And what right, and I'll go further, what right then does Donald Trump have and Attorney General Sessions have to uphold and enforce any law? Like, I don't know, cracking down harder on marijuana. What right does he have? Because you know what, Mr. President? If you're not going to uphold every single law that you have been elected to do and sworn in to do, then, sir, you are in default of your position. And then as far as I'm concerned, you've lost the right to enforce any law because you can't pick and choose. You can't sit there in the Oval Office and say, well, you know, I like this law, I'll enforce this one. Yeah, I don't really like this law, I'm not going to enforce this one. That's not how it works. I know that we've seen it work that way, especially with the last 4 or 5 presidents at least. But that's not how it works on paper. You were elected by we the American people to execute your office faithfully and within the confines of the Constitution of the United States and all of our laws. If you don't like a law, Mr. President, then you can lobby Congress to create a new bill, pass it, create a law, and you could sign it in. But your Secretary of Homeland Security, John F. Kelly, is out of bounds and is breaking the law by protecting illegal aliens. Period. End of story. We are a nation of laws. It's time to act like it. Or you know what? Step down. Step down then. Resign and hand it over to Pence. Let Pence not obey the law. He can step down too. So, I expect that President Trump is going to tell Homeland Security Secretary John F. Kelly, you will not harbor over 750,000 illegal aliens, and they will be deported as law enforcement runs into them. They will. Or, Mr. Kelly, if you will not do your job, then hand in your resignation effective immediately. That's the United States of America, ladies and gentlemen. That's how it's supposed to be. So, let's move on to what mass immigration costs the United States of America. And that could be legal immigration as well. This is immigration. And it costs this country billions and billions of dollars. We have real Americans out of work, in poverty, in medical pain, and yet we continue this flood of immigration, which not only hurts the incoming country, it also hurts the outgoing. Because the vast majority of immigrants that leave their country legally and come into the United States legally are very talented people in many, many areas. And it's usually the best talent that want to come to the United States that has the ability, that they'll have the ability to perfect their craft here than over there. But the outgoing country gets hurt because then they're left with not their best talent. And usually the ones that come to this country illegally through the back door, they're not the best of the best, folks. Because the best of the best want to come here legally. They don't want any trouble with the law. They want to make their way in this country. They want to become Americans. They want to adopt the American way of life. They don't want any trouble. So, it's usually the lower talented people that come into this country through the back door. This is also coming from the Washington Times. This is by Stephen Dinan, September 21st, 2016. Immigration drains the government, sapping as much as $296 billion a year from federal, state, and local taxpayers, while depressing wages. And that's the truth. And it says, certainly in the short run, according to an authoritative study released that particular Wednesday by the National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine. Now, I told you that last week. If the typical homeowner that wants some landscaping done around their home, and they're incapable, or they don't want to do it themselves, who do you think they're going to hire? Do you think they want to hire the legal American that's demanding $10 an hour, let's say? Or the illegal one who we could pay under the table, who's willing to take and be very happy with $6 an hour. Where's the temptation going to lie? Do you think the typical homeowner is going to say, no, I'm a real American here. I'm going to do it the right way, and I'm going to pay an American. Well, I might. You might. But by and large, no. The person's going to pay the $6 an hour person. Hey, I could save $4 an hour. Woohoo! So immigration, and especially illegal immigration, does depress wages. The 500-page academic tome, I guess that's what it's called, or is it tome? It's supposed to be the final word about the fiscal and economic effects of mass immigration, and its findings challenged some long-held assumptions of Washington policymakers that immigration is an unqualified benefit. Well, again, I do not see how immigration is a benefit. People that use that argument in the context that, well, they do the jobs that Americans don't want to do. Okay, first of all, I have a problem with that. Number one, too many parents today coddle and spoil their children and don't make them go out and work. Instead, they let them sit in their bedroom, like my wife does, with her son that's going to be 16 in a few months. Who, by the way, my wife is away on business. She comes home Wednesday. He's staying with his grandparents down the street because I refuse to pick up after him. There's probably going to be a war in my home Wednesday because when they get back, her son is going to serve a 2-week internet access suspension for not doing what he was supposed to do and stiffing me with it. And there's going to be a war in my home because my wife isn't going to go for this while I am not backing down. So, too many parents today coddle and spoil their children. They let them stay in the house longer than they should. And certainly, they just give too many handouts to their children and let them get away with too much. So, we have a parenting problem in this country. Also, we have too much welfare. Too many people qualify for government entitlements too easily. Take away the entitlements, take away the spoiling entitlement mentality, and guess what, folks? People will have to go to work. You either step up your game through private enterprise and you either become a business owner, you either go to school and get educated, either a regular university, and well, they're not that great, but if you pick the right major, you can certainly build a life for yourself. You can go to a vocational school, a trade school, or you can do like what I'm going to do. I'm going to have to reinvent myself, excuse me, at 52 and go into real estate because I want to make the big money. I don't want to work at a car wash or at a McDonald's. There's nothing wrong with that. That's not for me. I don't want to make $9 an hour. I am used to a higher quality of life, and that's what I want. So I'm going to have to go get it. So I either, if I get this interview, go on this interview, hopefully get the job. I'm still going to go for my real estate license anyway. Or if I don't get this interview and this job at all, go straight into it, right? I got to go through the real estate school, and I just got to go into it. Because I want a high quality of life. I enjoy it. My wife enjoys it. So, the entitlements that Americans get have to go away. And then the excuse that immigrants come here and do the job that we don't want to do is over. Because you're either going to do those jobs or you're going to starve to death. I mean, that's how it works. So, the data shows that immigrants take in more benefits than they pay in taxes. Well, of course. Of course they do. Illegals especially, and I don't know how any illegal can pay taxes. How does an illegal immigrant pay taxes? That's brilliant. If the IRS is receiving tax revenue from illegals, well, then you've got their name, you've got their address, pick them up, send them out of here. So that doesn't make sense to me. And by the way, this is very big here. The data shows that immigrants take in more benefits. Right. Although immigrants do boost the size of the economy, the gains are heavily skewed towards the immigrants themselves and to wealthy investors. Right. Not to native-born workers who end up competing with the new rivals. Now, this is a very important thing here. And this article does not touch on it. Boosting the size of the economy doesn't mean that particular economy is good. California, if I'm not mistaken, on its own, and I didn't fact check this because this just came to my head now, I believe, so I'm going to play it safe, is in the top 10 of the world's largest economies. Do you know what fiscal shape the state of California is in? Let me put it this way. It's not too good. They're not in too good a shape, folks. Having a big economy doesn't mean that you have a good economy. And it doesn't mean that your people are benefiting from a big economy. Let's look at the communist nation of China. They're battling the United States for the world's biggest economy. Do you think the average Chinese family in China is living well? Do you think they're fat and happy? Do you think life is a bed of roses? Oh, look, the economy's huge. The country must be doing well then. Nope. The government's doing well. Oh, the people in the government is doing very well. The people in North Korea, that little fat guy is doing well. The Castros are doing well. And the big wealthy investors that are investing in China, like Apple, Harry Reid's son, those kinds of people, they're doing very well. Sure. But how are the citizens themselves doing? Not so well. So, the size of one's nation or one's country of one's state doesn't mean squat. Like a certain piece of genitalia, they always want to use the phrase, size doesn't matter. In this case, economy size doesn't matter. What matters is the quality of life the average citizen has. What is the health of the average native worker in that country? And folks, here in America, despite what you've been led to believe, ain't so good. You've been led to believe that the unemployment rate is 4.4% and is dropping. Even Alex Jones is pumping up how hundreds of thousands of jobs have been created since Trump has become president, how great the Dow Jones is, which, by the way, folks, you know, we criticize the liberals for using that argument with Obama. Oh, look how the stock market's gone up! And we criticized Obama saying that the Dow Jones and the stock market was a false nomer, or a misnomer, depending upon that word. It was a misnomer that it wasn't really a reflection of the economy. Well, that hasn't changed, folks, in 5 months, okay? Or 6 months. Hasn't changed. That's still the case. All the Dow Jones represents is stocks bought versus stocks sold. That's all that number represents. It doesn't tell you who is buying the stock, who is selling the stock, and what sectors are benefiting or losing. It doesn't tell you that. It is the volume of activity. It is stocks sold, bought versus sold. That's it. And we've been saying for years that through crony capitalism, government bailouts, contracts, zero interest rates, the whole nine yards has been an absolute manipulation of the stock market. And somehow we've been led to believe that as the Dow Jones index goes up, oh, the health of the economy improves. That is not the case. That's a lie. You've been fed an absolute lie. And yet, I'm sorry, Alex, but every day, almost practically every day, you're pumping the same story. Oh, $3 trillion has been pumped into the stock market. Oh, the stock market's gone up 15%. Oh, the job, he's created hundreds of thousands of jobs. Oh, sorry, Alex. Your own article here that you, well, it's by Michael Snyder, that's on the Infowars.com website. The true story is that the real unemployment number, 102 million working age Americans do not have a job. If honest numbers were being used, the unemployment rate is currently 22%. Now, I've been saying that myself for 5 years. I've said that one out of five qualified to work Americans are out of work. And 22% is a hair above it. It's actually technically 1.1, but five Americans are out of work. Now, I don't know if this article is going to touch on it. I haven't read the whole thing yet. But then you factor in the underemployed. And I've talked about who they are. Real quick, a person making 100 grand a year, loses his job, can't find another one at 100 grand, has to break down and get another job. He gets another job for 50. That doesn't pay all the bills. He gets a part-time job for another 20. He's working 60, 70 hours a week like a dog. Folks, he's still only making $70,000, okay? He's one person, but the Department of Labor counts that as two jobs being created. The whole thing's a lie. He's still underemployed by $30,000. Do you understand? You factor those people in, And I'm going to look for this at some point. I'm going to go out on a limb, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to say the underemployment rate could be as high as 35 to 40%. I'm going out on a limb, but I'm going to see if I could find that. Because I could have sworn months ago, I've tried to and I couldn't find it, but I'm going to try again. So Michael Snyder asked the question, did you know that the number of working age Americans that do not have a job right now is far higher than it was the worst moments of the last recession? I'm not surprised. For example, in January 2009, 92.6 million working age Americans did not have a job. But we just found out that in May, the number of working age Americans without a job increased to a shade under 102 million. We'll go over those numbers in more detail in a moment, but first I, and this is Michael Snyder, want to talk a little bit about the difference between perception and reality. Here it comes. According to the bureaucrats in the federal government, the unemployment rate, in quotes, in May of 2017, was the lowest that we've seen in 16 years. At just 4.3%, we are essentially at full employment. Well, who really believes that, okay? And so according to them, anyone that really wants a job should be able to find one pretty easily. Okay, well, you know what? Hey, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to be the litmus test to that statement. Anybody could easily find a job. Well, let's find out, because I've just lost mine Friday. I'm currently out of a job. And when this show is over, I get to go on the Department of Labor website and I get to file for unemployment. Yay! And let's see how long it takes for me to find a job at my level. And I just want to make this statement. One, it's going to take time for me to get my real estate license, and I'm going to pursue that. I will accept a job in IT that's comparable to my pay. And if I don't get that, by the time I get my license, I will do my best to sign on, and I know somebody will take me, sign on to a firm. But it's commission based. And we'll see how long it takes before I get paid on a sale of a house. It'll be my first one. And how long I get money, how long it takes for me to get money into my checking account. So, allegedly, we're at full employment. And anyone that really wants a job, I mean, sure, I could go to McDonald's, maybe. They might not take a 52-year-old guy. That's really a young person's job. They might not take, but yeah, I could get a job for $9 an hour. That's not a job at my level, folks. And it's not being obnoxious. But again, as I've stated, I'm used to a certain style of living. That's the way I've lived. I don't want a $9 an hour job. That's not what I went to school for. That's not what I've busted my ass for 36 years in the workforce to do. I am a white-collar, very well-paid individual. I've made my bones. So, we continue. So, of course, that's a load of nonsense that anyone that really wants a job can just get one pretty easily. John Williams of ShadowStats.com tracks what our economic numbers would look like if honest numbers were being used. And according to his calculations, the unemployment rate is currently 22%. So what accounts for the rather wide disparity between those numbers? Well, the truth is that the official unemployment rate that the mainstream media endlessly hypes, and unfortunately Alex Jones has been hyping, is so manipulated that it has essentially lost all meaning at this point. In May, we were told that the U.S. economy added 138,000 jobs. But that's not even enough to keep up with population growth. And by the way, this 138,000 jobs is a total screw job because I had discussed an article, and I think I posted it to Facebook, that ADP, one of the largest payroll processing firms, originally said that 255, somewhere around there, 1,000 jobs were created, breaking expectations, the stock market went up, blah, 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 blah. And then the Department of Labor put out their 138,000 stat, and that blew everything out the door. So that's not keeping up with population growth. Now, let's look deeper into the numbers. Some major red flags then quickly emerge. You will not hear it on the news, but in May, the U.S. economy actually lost 367,000 full-time jobs. That is an absolutely nightmarish figure, and it confirms the fact that economic activity is starting to drastically slow down. All right, folks, we're in a lot of trouble. But somehow, the unemployment rate in May fell from 4.4%, in quotes, to 4.3%, in quotes. Now, how in the world can they pull that off, you may ask? Well, for years, the government has been taking large numbers of people from the basket known as officially unemployed and dumping them into another basket known as not in the labor force. See, that's the key, ladies and gentlemen. Since those that are not in the labor force do not count towards the unofficial unemployment, the official, excuse me, unemployment rate, they can make things look better than they actually are by moving people into that category. In May, the government added a staggering 608,000 Americans into the not in the labor force category. So now the number of working age Americans not in the labor force has reached a total of 94.98 million. When you add that total to the number of Americans that are officially unemployed, only, and this is really sick, 6.86 million, you get a grand total of 101.84 million Americans. In other words, when you round up to the nearest million, you get a grand total of 102 million Americans that do not have a job now. And we conservatives, let's just throw me in that umbrella for a second, we discussed that. And we hammered that on social media, that the non-participatory workforce became the largest it's been since the Carter administration under Obama. We elect President Trump, all of a sudden, that's all forgotten. Well, guess what, ladies and gentlemen? Michael Snyder doesn't forget, ShadowStats.com doesn't forget, and The Truth Zone, with your host, Michael B., doesn't forget that. So, if you go back to January 2009, there were 81.02 million Americans that were not in the labor force and 11.6 million Americans that were considered to be officially unemployed. So that means that, according to the federal government, there were 92.6 million working age Americans that did not have a job at that point. So if the number of working age Americans without a job has risen by 9.21 million since January 2009, are we really doing so much better than we were during the depths of the last recession? I will say no. Another way to look at this by examining the civilian employment population ratio. Just before the last recession, about 63% of the working age population had a job. But then during the recession, that number fell to between 58 and 59% for quite a while. We have finally gotten back to the 60% mark, but we are still far, far below the level that we were at before the last recession struck. So, in essence, government bureaucrats pull a number out of the air and add jobs to the report based on an estimate of how many new businesses they think are being created in a particular month. Is it possible there is a chance that they are being overly optimistic? No, they're fudging the freaking numbers. Okay? They're fudging the numbers. So Michael Snyder and I cannot possibly see how anyone, including Alex Jones, can claim that the economy is doing better. It's not. Just prior to the last recession, there were 26 million Americans on food stamps. Now we have 44 million. We are on pace to absolutely shatter the all-time record for store closings in a single year. And the number of homeless people living in Los Angeles County has risen by 23% over the last 12 months. You see? California is in the top 10 in the world's largest economies, but their homeless rate has risen by 23% over the past 12 months. That's very important, ladies and gentlemen. So, when Donald Trump says to you that he's bringing jobs back to America, he's not telling the truth. What he should be saying is the truth, and that is the damage that Bill Clinton, George W. Bush, and Barack Obama have done to the United States economy is so devastating that at this point, what Donald Trump can do, and I'm sorry, this should have been number one. I get it, we need the wall. I get it, Obamacare has to be repealed. I get it, we have to stop Muslims from coming into this country from the top nations sponsoring terrorism. I get all of that. But the first thing that should have been on the list was restructuring the income tax. I think it should be abolished all the way, but you know, that's wishful thinking. But the first order of business was lowering taxes on everybody and putting more money into all of our pockets. That should have been priority number one. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't see it that way. But President Trump, you're going to get this article. I doubt you'll see it. I'm only one person. If millions of people were to tweet him this article, I would say then it would get his attention. But the truth is, folks, we are not in good shape. And Michael Snyder, I mean, I went all the way down this article, and he did not even discuss the underemployment rate. But I'm not close to ending the show. I do want to end it, though, on good news. Now, as we know, Barack Obama promised to bankrupt the coal industry here in America. Promised. He promised to do so. He said he would do it. You want to open up a plant? Great. But I'm going to enforce so many regulations on you, you're going to go bankrupt. He said it. In states like Ohio, Pennsylvania, and West Virginia, put that guy in office anyway. And I can't swear for Pennsylvania and West Virginia, but I could swear for Ohio, they voted for him twice. They gave Obama their electoral votes in 2008 and 2012. Now, luckily, and of course, it was after the damage was done. I can't speak for West Virginia, but Ohio and Pennsylvania went for Donald Trump. Well, that was a smart move. So, under the Trump administration, one good thing did happen. And that is, the first coal mine of Trump era opens in Pennsylvania. This is coming from FoxNews.com. A lot of mainstream media articles coming from me this morning, but that's okay. You know, it's not all fake news. Their agenda is manipulated. That's really the problem. It's not that every article is fake. It's just that they've been compromised severely. And because of that, and I'm sorry, I'm putting something on Twitter. This is not going to fit. I'm just going to post to Facebook real quick, my show. So, at least Pennsylvania and Ohio got the message, and now we've got the first coal mine. And like I said, mainstream media, it's not all fake, it's manipulated. President Trump lauded the opening of the nation's first new coal mine in recent memory. Corsa Coal Company will operate the mine in Somerset County, Pennsylvania, outside of Pittsburgh. Corsa CEO George Detlefson said the mine will be a boon to the struggling local economy. Yes, it will. He praised Trump's easing of regulations and encouragement for fossil fuel exploration. Yes, indeed. You see? Lowering regulations, lowering taxes will legitimately and truthfully turn the country around. Detlefson told Leland Vittert that for the 70 positions available in the mine, 400 people applied. It's a hard day's work every day, but it's worth it, one miner said. Vittert said the news contrasts with Hillary Clinton's message that she would put a lot of coal miners out of work. She said it. It's on YouTube. And unfortunately, I just didn't get to upload that clip. As I said at the top of the hour, the little woman is away on business and I'm running the whole house. And with the dogs and cats and an acre of land, it ain't easy. I'm tired. And I just didn't get a chance to do the research I wanted. But she did say it. Pennsylvania Governor Tom Wolf, who endorsed Clinton, yeah, that jackass, joined the mine company in watching a video message from Trump commemorating the occasion. Yeah, you're damn right, douchebag. What a douchebag governor. Yeah, a Democrat. See, if his endorsement of Clinton worked, and if Pennsylvania went over to Clinton and a couple of other states, she's the president, and you're not getting this mine, and 70 positions wouldn't be being filled. Which, by the way, this probably won't be the end to Corsa. When that mine does well, and that plant does well, and all that other good stuff, and more regulations come down, and if Corsa makes more money, they're going to expand to another coal mine, and another, and another, and more companies will join in. And so, we'll have thousands of real, legitimate, well-paying jobs being created. So, And here's another great article, CNSnews.com. And I'm going to close with this. The U.S. mining industry. This is great, folks. The U.S. mining industry sees its first profitable quarter in 2 years. This is by Terrence P. Jeffrey, June 12th. Today. Woo! The U.S. mining industry had its first profitable quarter in 2 years in the first quarter of this year, according to the data published last week by the U.S. Census Bureau. In the first 3 months of 2017, U.S. mining corporations with assets of $50 million or more had combined after-tax profits of $1.957 billion, according to the Census Bureau, which had posted quarterly U.S. mining industry after-tax profits and losses going back to the fourth quarter of 2000. The after-tax profit that the U.S. mining industry earned in the first quarter of this year was a dramatic reversal from the first quarter of last year, right, when Obama was still president, when mining corporations with assets of $50 million or more posted losses of $27 billion, folks. So, in 12 months, Trump reduces regulations. We go from a 27 plus billion dollar loss to an after-tax profit of $1.957 billion in 12 months, ladies and gentlemen. Do you see what happens when government gets out of the way? Do you see what happens, libtards, when you take the handcuffs off of business? Business grows, business expands, jobs are created, people are more independent and free, in charge of their own destiny, and they are not at the control, and they are not at the whim of the government. People can be in charge of their own destinies. But the libtards, they don't want to accept that as truth. Because most of these libtards are so skewed, they're communists. They're so skewed in their thinking that they just want to sit on their ass and bitch. They want to bitch how crappy they've been led to believe their lives are, how crappy this country is, how evil white men are running this show. Which, we know it's not just white men, okay? And they just want to bitch, instead of making a life for themselves. And this is what we have to stop infusing into our children. I got my hair cut at Supercut Saturday. And I had a Hillary Lock Her Up t-shirt from Infowars.com. I've got many t-shirts. And as I was walking out, a couple took notice of my shirt. Before you know it, I'm holding court, and I'm talking about the Hillary crimes, Comey. I'm talking about, you know, they asked me how the Muslims fit in, and I said how they're being used as the hammer against us, and the globalists are the hand. I was talking to them like 15, 20 minutes, handed out my card for my show, and, you know, that's really, this is my element. I know what I'm talking about, folks. And they asked, well, what can we do? And I said, well, and I think it was Frederick Douglass that said this, it is easier to mold a healthy child than to fix a broken adult. We must teach our children as early as we can in their lives, the Bible and the Constitution. We must teach them the truth about this country, the truth about the great presidents that we've had, and we've had them. The truth about free enterprise, morality, ethics, truly loving your neighbor as yourself and not screwing them and not forcing them to live a certain lifestyle, to protect true human rights and true religions that don't kill people on a daily basis, to uphold the laws and the general welfare of this country, and that doesn't mean putting people on welfare. Doing what's right. Believing in the one true God. Call him, the last name given was given to Moses, Yahweh or Jehovah, I am who I shall prove to be. You could use either translation, and his son, Jesus Christ. And I just want to mention, real quick in closing, that I had put up a Facebook post calling on all Christians to wear their crosses in public, loud and proud, and have got well over 100 responses. Thank you. Wear your cross. Take up your cross. My name is Michael B. This is the Truth Zone. See you tomorrow, 10 a.m. Central.